Then there was an explosion. It's very hard for me to describe it. This thing broke up into multiple shards of extremely bright light. I, and others, suffered burns to the eyes. I have documents of this, because I stole them from Bentwaters when an officer advised me to. He said, "Your military record is going to vaporize as soon as you are gone." So my eyes were damaged. Flash burns to the retinas and all. This is established medically. It was as if I'd stared at an arc welder's torch for about 10 minutes, which is unadvisable. Everything was very bizarre at that point. This explosion of light was very silent, and where it happened there appeared a structured, solid object, rather large. Probably 30 feet at the base, to a pyramid-type shape. It was very rough. It would distort if you looked at it, with a rainbow-like effect. And yet, through peripheral vision, you could get a clear fix. I will tell you, there is real evidence for this thing. Where it sat. To this day. This one won't let anyone down. This case. Believe me. This thing was there, on the ground. And it was filmed, and it was photographed. There were some British bobbies present on Charles Holt's tape. You hear the Suffolk Constabulary pull up in the forest, with their British police vehicle, because their siren was on for a bit. These police are unattainable. They won't talk to anyone. They had a camera, and one was taken off of the British police. Already, an international incident was brewing. Our wing commander, Gordon Williams, who was at a party, I believe, that night, arrived on site with other senior people. There were British military present. They could have been at the party. And, I will say, they seemed to know how to deal with an event like this. I have no recollection of any sound emitting from this object. It was almost like a mirage, and yet, I know it was solid because it left traces and evidence and all, but it was so beyond anything I have ever seen, and it was right in front of us. I was only 30 feet away from it at one point. Too close. There was a life form in association with it. So I can just cut to the chase. I remember thinking, what are these children doing here? And the mind starts scrambling. There was a bright light, and there was movement. These things had an upper body, I clearly saw, and when I saw an arm move, you are in another place at that point. And, these senior people were very close to that phenomenon. What I saw was on the right side of this bizarre machine. This bright light moved out, and it was bluish gold and about a foot off the ground. It split. It was only about 4 feet in height from the ground up. But it split away. And three individual, oblong cocoons of light with these three individual people in them. They would have been about 4 feet in height. I mean, you think of children. The light diminished, and that's when you could see what was in it. They were hairless, but there was clothing. There was an apparatus attached. I can't describe. A dark thing. I could not see the lower extremities because of the light. These were not walking on the ground. These things. And, I wish I never saw this, but there was a white membrane around what were large eyes. And the white membrane was moving, adapting. It was like your eyes adjusting to light. The commander was the dot, and this is where I swear there's got to be a protocol in the event of something like this. He moved forward, and at that point we were called out of the area by rank. In fact, a lot of lower ranking people were involved in this, and were sent back to the vehicles. On our way back, there was a lot of phenomena in the forest. These light beings, or whatever, were there, and there were other craft around, above the trees. Almost as if they were guarding this thing and backing it up. I will tell you that Burroughs was in the parking area where all the vehicles were. They would not let him out to the sites. Charles Holt was pursuing other light phenomena and had beams fired down to the ground right in front of him. Literally. Pencil-sized beams from these crescent-like objects. The colonel was making a tape recording as it all happened. 4 hours of audio. You've got 18 minutes of dynamite. My event was happening about a half a mile away. In fact, on that tape, you hear the beginning of my event. I will clarify this, I was on the record long before the whole tape became public, and I was the one that made the whole tape go public. I turned it over to CNN. And I've never taken a penny for anything I've done with this, ever. I never have. As we left, Eamon Burrows told me another object appeared. Right in the midst of a lot of security personnel at the parking area where all the trucks were. It appeared right in the midst of them. Burrows grabbed this object, and it moved over the ground 10 meters with him holding onto it. It's an absolute fact. Physically touched it. He moved with this thing on it. It took off. It got away from John, another beam of light came down. There was one guy, a part of the security personnel, in a pickup truck. This thing was following him. One of these beings and the light literally following him. He jumped into the pickup truck, slammed the door, and it passed through the glass right in front of him, and he freaked and kicked the windscreen right out of the truck. This thing went out the other window. I know this person. This was happening in front of many people too. It went out the other window, which was rolled up because it's December. As he turned away from the vehicle, a blue beam of light came down from above the trees, and this thing got on it and ran right up into something that was dark and looked like a pine cone with white pins of light on it. It was dark against the night sky, and was watching over this event. Another officer has said that he felt that these objects had been looking for something. They were conducting grid searches the night before. There were three nights of activity. They were there for a reason, and it was kind of like, okay, we are here for a purpose, you guys are bothering us, so we are going to show you what you need to know. But we are going to accomplish what we need to do. I will tell you that Colonel Charles Holt said to me later, were you aware that on that night, there were three massive triangular objects over the base, over the forest, and over the Woodbridge base the whole time? And there was missing time with so many personnel over this period. It was amazing. Afterwards, I noticed I had a shock of grey hair that did fall out. Literally, a shock of grey hair on the right side. My eyes were watering profusely. I had a metallic taste in my mouth, and I was sweating profusely, and had cold chills. I decided, I'm going to go call my mother. But we had secured phones on the base, obviously. Being rather young and naive, I didn't pay attention to the ComSec rules, communication security. We had a phone where I knew they'd always listened in on your calls, so I went to a public phone box, when they used to have them here on the base, and reversed the charges to my mom. I said, Mom, you won't believe this. I said, last night a UFO landed on the base, and we saw everything, and you wouldn't believe it. And, I'm just thinking, she's not responding, Mum. Mum? She's gone. I looked at Greg, a friend with me, and I go, oh my god, I got cut off. I called the operator, and I said, listen, can you reconnect me? She goes, are you calling from their base? I go, yeah. She goes, I'm sorry, you were cut off from the base, and then she hung up on me. I looked at Greg, and said, man, I think I'm in trouble. So, we ran back to my dorm. Before I called my mother, we were called to the office. Malcolm Zickler, a major, was the chief of security police, and his underling Major Carl Rory. All were involved in one aspect or another with these events. There was a Jaguar outside the office, and there was another expensive car. I don't remember what it was now. I thought, oh, here we go. The debriefing. Well, first of all, there were all the lower ranking guys. There were no people above sergeant in my group. We were debriefed in a compartmentalized way, which I understand now, but then I didn't. And, I said, oh my god, they are going to tell us to shut up, I know it. I'll name names. There were people in plain clothes going in and out of the security police law enforcement desk, and that was unusual. And, I'm like, oh boy. They said, did any of you retrieve or remove anything from the forest while you were in there? Anything? A rock, twig, anything? They kept asking us over and over. And, they said, if you have, and are not going to tell us now, you are subject to the UCMJ, all these rules, Article 15. Beyond that, JL11, everything. We were young, we were all new. We were like, oh my god, we haven't even started here, and we are in trouble. We were gone over with a Geiger counter, and there was one return on one of the guys, and something was taken out of his pocket. This guy was removed very quickly, and I will swear on my life. I never saw him again. He was removed. This happened to a lot of people. It led to a suicide that the Air Force is responsible for. This is a real person with a real name. That base, by the way, after that, eventually had the highest rate of suicide in NATO. This is an established fact. One of the captains involved was found hanging in his back garden from a tree. Married, with children. Everything. All these people started to shoot and kill themselves. I've lived it. And I'm amazed I got out of there alive. So, we were brought into the office. There were rows of seats, a very small law enforcement desk. The law enforcement operators that day were kept out of the office. Everything was different on that base now. We were brought in and there were sheets on top of the law enforcement desk. There were about 10 of us, and 7 stacks of documents. Pre-typed. One was a pre-typed statement, all generic, of what we saw. Which was not what we saw. It said we were off duty and saw only unknown lights flipping amongst the trees. I clearly remember that. I said, what if we don't sign this, Major Zickler? And, he said, you have no choice. I kept seeing these other personnel in his office, because we were heading the next. He told us to sign. I think there were 4 documents. One was the UCMJ secrecy thing and that clearly said, JANAP. But, there were other things that we couldn't read. They said, you'll be able to read them later, put your signature on, social security number. Then we were filed into his office. There was a movie screen set up. There were 2 rows of chairs, metal chairs, folded out. Major Zickler left, and there were 2 gentlemen in civilian clothes. Big people, very business looking, American. They had a plastic ID with a photo and it said Armed Forces Security Services. I don't know if that's Air Force. We have been told that is a field arm of the National Security Agency. They were intimidating people. They didn't smile or anything. We were in uniform. They asked us specifically to wear the uniforms we were wearing in the field. I think that was for the Geiger counter thing. So we sat down, and a naval commander from the US Navy on parenthesis, Office of Naval Intelligence, in London, named Commander Richardson, was there. He had the reins. He was in uniform and was very affable with us. Basically, it went like this. I was sitting next to a friend of mine from Alabama, who we called Alabama. Alabama was religious. At this point, he was so unwrapped, he had a handheld Bible and was reading it. He was gone. And being so young, at 19, the human condition isn't apparent to a lot of people. People's pain and trauma. But I was watching this guy I knew melting down. Next to me. He is one guy that didn't make it. And he is a name, and he had a family, and everything. They didn't care about that. But what Commander Richardson did say is that we were all numb, but this is very clear. In a nutshell, you airmen have been exposed to something that we have known all about for longer than any one of you in this room are aware of. And it was all matter of fact. He said, there is a phenomenon that has been coming here for many, many years. Some of it comes and goes, some of it is a permanent presence. They didn't say a phenomenon, they said various civilizations. Advanced civilizations. And, there was a lot of talk about the reasons for secrecy. National security. He said, you're best to go on with your lives. One of the guys in the room said, what if we say something? He replies, know this now. Your mail and phones will be monitored for as long as you are in the military. The best way to go about it is not discussing this with anyone, even each other, from this point on. Go about your lives, forget about all this. Move on with your lives, with the knowing that you have seen something that few people will ever get to see. Every other word was loyalty to national security, our oath, serving the country. It was brainwashing, because all of a sudden, it was repetitive lines, and there was a drone to his voice. They said, "We are going to show you a film that might help you best put into perspective what you gentlemen have witnessed, and help you, maybe, put it to bed a little bit for yourselves." We were also told, though, if any of us had any unusual dreams, there's a number we were to call, daily, for the next month. If anyone was trying to pry information out of us, we were to let the authorities know. They said that there would be a possibility of Soviet infiltration of the area. To try to get information from us. At that time, it was the Cold War, and they said to be aware of anything, we were to report that immediately. They ran the film. I mean, it was just a film on a reel. It was not narrated, he did not narrate it. It began with gun camera footage from what I can only assume was maybe the 1940s. It showed some propeller-driven aircraft in broad daylight. It looked like the Florida Keys, and a fleet of silver discs went under the aircraft. That was one of the first frames. This thing went all the way up to the space program. The best clip on it showed the berets of the 5th Special Forces in Vietnam on a red clay hill with low scrub brush and a guy with a camera. I don't even know the year, but it was in color. He turns the camera and this giant, green, delta-shaped thing rises out of the brush, very slowly and deliberately, below where they are, up to face level, camera level, and then continues. But, shrubbery and brush is falling off this massive thing, and a flock of big pelicans or other birds goes right under it. I'll never forget that in my life. I remember that better than the incident in the field. The space program, I swear to God. This film showed structures on the moon. These box kind of things. That looked sand colored. It showed that lunar car moving around. I remember those clearly, because I remember being a child when all that was happening. Then at a distance. The astronauts pointing at these box looking things, and structured objects moving off the surface of the moon. Filmed by Apollo missions. The objects looked like a continuation of the color of the moon. But there was structure to it. Like, huge box kinds of things. Very square and angular structures without windows. But they were artificial, clearly, and, they were being filmed, and then, there were lights and weird things on top of hills. They looked pristine. A lot of it was with the lunar car. That mission. Some of it was the astronauts on spacewalks, and something dark coming right up near them, with points of red light. I remember that. All of this was very quick. They never showed it again. The Apollo mission is the era where it ended. So, after this meeting, and calling my mother and getting cut off, I knew I was in trouble. I was called to the communications section of Bentwaters. I knew what was coming. A staff sergeant was there, and the captain debriefed me. I was asked questions. There was a reel-to-reel tape machine present in the debriefing, and they kept asking me, "Have you given sensitive information out over land lines?" Over, and over. And, I said, "No, no." And they said, "Do you want to go with that?" And I said, "Yes." I was lying through my teeth. And they played the tape. "Here's me. Hi, Mom. You'll never believe," they said, "Warren, you have to understand, every phone on this base is monitored all the time anyway." I was told that I was not given an Article 15 because that is traceable. I would be fined $300, and if I caused any more trouble, I'd lose my stripes. There is a paper trail on that fine, and no explanation. Later, I was threatened with the IRS and everything. Madness. They are crazy. The machine is crazy. Later, we were eating, and Sergeant Peniston was sitting right there. Someone asked me, "What the hell happened to us last night?" And Sergeant Peniston, who was senior, he goes, "Shut the fuck up, Warren, shut the fuck up." Just like that. I was like this, "Oh my God," and I threw my tray down and just walked out. It was all downhill from there, my friend. Later that night, Sergeant Bustinza, myself. And I swear it happened to others. Received a phone call to meet a vehicle in the parking lot. Sergeant Bustenzel and I were to meet this vehicle at 5 o'clock that afternoon. It was dark at that point in England. We both walked up. I said, "Hi, Busty, how you doing?" He goes, "All right." And we both walked toward this vehicle. The door was open. There was a guy sitting there. In reality, what happened is, two people came up behind each of us. And I do remember someone heading towards him. And I heard the sound of what sounded like an aerosol, and I went black. My conscious memory for years was that the interior lights in the car were too bright, and I just blacked out. In reality, we were hit with an aerosol of some sort. My nose ran profusely, and my chest got tight. I, obviously, was not getting into the car properly, so I was beaten, literally hit in the ribs and pushed. I was resisting, and I know Sergeant Bustenzo was doing the same thing. I had identified myself as a problem. It turns out, years later, that he had made some phone calls too. We were taken somewhere on the Bentwaters flight line. I knew this by the sound of where we went. When I was removed from that car, I cut my face, because I fell out of it. Obviously, being immobile and hit a patch of concrete and ice, and was carried, literally bodily, face down. I remember my nose running so profusely, and I couldn't wipe it or anything. I didn't know if it was bleeding or what. I know we descended. I will tell you there is an underground facility on that base that is to this day there. I have more memories of it being a very clinical situation. We do know, at this time, a lot of outside people were on the base. There were teams in the forest. Aircraft came into Woodbridge, and even the commanders of the base had no access to get near it, or ask why they were there. Teams in white coveralls were going throughout the forest. There were intelligence people on the base that were never there before. These are all things that can be established as fact, from many other people. Anyway, I have 20 minutes of recall, and I'm gone for a day. And, it's established with other people. People said I was on emergency leave, or on leave, or off the base. But I was just under the base. And there were other personnel down there. There was a lot of high-tech machinery, huge vaulted, glass-like ceilings, panels of glass walls. Like a subway wall. Old, but huge glass panels. We were brought to one area, and I have a conscious memory, whether it is real or not, of looking into a very dark void, and having someone to this side of me explaining that there were tunnels from the base to the North Sea. My next conscious memory is just broad daylight. Walking out into the sunshine from the base photographic lab. A lot of younger guys and I went through this. I do remember being on a table and seeing Air Force senior people, and some other unidentified people, talking down to me. I know I was looking up at them with bright lights. I had marks, by the way, from and for, or something, when I came out of there. I had the bruise and I had a bandage. I will admit that. That's for real. I had it. I'm terrified to know or think of what might have happened, so I've only pursued these memories a little bit. I wrote my mother a letter, and I wrote the letter a week and a half before Charles Holt authored the actual Holt memo, which was gained by the Freedom of Information Act. It is a document that reads like science fiction on Air Force letterhead. It's a minimizing of the event. I believe, intentional. But it reads like science fiction. It was released in 1983 through Citizens Against UFO Secrecy, based on information I supplied them, after numerous denials, from the Air Force itself, that it existed. Podcasts were made of the indentations where the object landed on the first night. Charles Holt still has possession of one of them, and does show people this, and would show it to any congressional body, I think. Most of them ended up missing. Soil analysis was done on the landing site, but it was all swept away. Years later, from 1988 to 1990, we did core samples, soil analysis, which was analyzed by Springborn Environmental Labs in Massachusetts by accredited scientists. We have the published findings in the book Left at Eastgate. An absolute phenomenon took place only in that spot. To a level of 3 feet down. Plants do not grow in this one spot. No matter what crop. We've talked to the farmers. For 20 years. However, the soil is darker. It does not absorb water. It is almost crystalline, mixed with a very dry dirt, like freeze-dried coffee. It was, in a theoretical way, heating the soil to a degree in an industrial microwave oven. To a super high heat. And then dropping it, instantly, into a sub-zero freeze. In almost a conical direction. Down. Rafwatton, a Royal Air Force base, had radar returns of these objects on all nights in question. Rafwatton, on the first and third night, picked up an object descending into the forest. The next day, the U.S. Air Force went to Rafwatton, talked to the air traffic controllers, and told them that an alien spacecraft landed in Rendlesham Forest. There was contact with the base commander, and they were borrowing the radar tapes, but the tapes were never returned. These are all real people that are apparently talking now. I also know that on one of the nights in question, a small object appeared near the perimeter of Rafwatton, not far from our base. Of course, they had higher security because of the IRA threat at that time. A Royal Air Force police dog handler, (K9 team, was doing a perimeter patrol, and the dogs went flat down on the ground. Then they saw these two beings near the fence line. Prodding it. Next to a triangular object. They were prodding the fence with these light-like objects. When they saw the rough dog handlers, they fled toward this machine that took off and headed off toward our base. When people ask about the film and photographs, there is confirmation. This isn't a story I came up with. Captain Mike Verano verifies on the Cable News Network program, UFO, The Bentwaters Incident, from 1985, that indeed he drove the Wing Commander Gordon Williams, the next morning, to an awaiting jet. The pilot opened the canopy, and he said, "What do you have in that satchel?" And he said, "I have actual film. We have actual film and photographs of the UFO." So, Gordon Williams personally handed this material, in a satchel, to the pilot, Mike Verano. I, by the way, asked where the film was going, and I was told Germany. That was Air Force Command at that time. From there, we know that there was a paper trail, and that it was eventually sent back to Washington. I was an honorably discharged security policeman. I've heard a lot of nasty things said about me, but I have my records. The only reason I have my records is because I was advised to steal some of them. By an Air Force colonel. Because he said they would vaporize you. He said, they are going to fireproof you. I was looked at almost like a Frank Serpico kind of guy. I was not a team player, because I was talking to everyone. Unfortunately, my friend Alabama went out trying to get back home. At O'Hare Airport, he was captured by the FBI and returned to duty immediately. All he wanted to do was go home, but he was put back on flight duty. I was riding with the senior master sergeant on vehicle patrol, just totally depressed with everything, when Alabama called in. This is a real person. And said he was going to kill himself if he couldn't go home. And, this guy turned the pickup truck quick, and was heading toward the post. He said, "You stay on the goddamn radio." I saw all the units across the flight line responding and everything. I never hear Mr. Holt comment on this at all, and that's why he won't stand with me in a place. Because I bring up things that maybe they feel bad about. As he says, the Air Force was on the sidelines for it all. Anyway, Alabama had a short M16, and he put it in his mouth and took the top of his head off. This was the first time I ever saw death. Violent death. At 19. We were as different as night and day, me and this kid. You know. He was the South, I was the North. He was very religious. I respect that. But we had nothing in common. He was a nice guy. And, they did not do anything to help us. I have had unbelievable phone problems for years. The typical things. And my mail is still intercepted. In this country, (the UK), it was opened and resealed in plastic for years, with a letter of apology. Many of our packages don't get where they are going. Later, my passport was coming up for renewal, and I sent it in. It would have expired by the time I was going on a trip.